Hello, I am Dr. Joanna Cloy. I'm a soil scientist at SRUC, and today I want to welcome Sam Parsons from Balkaski Estate, who's going to have a chat with me about farming practices and soils and the benefits of mob grazing. So, Sam, can you tell me what your role at Balkaski is?
Yeah, hello, Joanna. I look after the estate for the Anstruther family at Balkaski with the farming enterprises and various other food and properties, etc.
Can you tell us a bit about the size of your farm business and the kind of history? Any dramatic changes?
Nothing dramatic and nothing exciting. The estate itself is about 4,500 acres. And we farm about 3,200 in hand ourselves. In 2015, we were a fairly conventional, mainly arable business with suckler cows as well on some LFA land. And we were just, you know, conventionally farming, and our livestock were producing fat cattle for supermarkets. The Anstruther family did a review where they looked back 50 years and then projected forward 50 years to see where they felt that the direction was going in land ownership, land management, farming, etc. And one of the things that they were concerned about was the deterioration in some key metrics, and that was biodiversity, employment, risk, reward, capital involved, but also just soil degradation was one of the things that was a kind of key indicator. We could see over a period of 50 years, we'd increased the amount of cultivations and horsepower required to do the same job. We were producing cereals for increasing cost per ton, but actually the value per ton wasn't increasing. And they decided that actually they wanted to get off that bandwagon and look at a more sustainable, longer term land management practice. So in 2016, we started organic conversion. And we just started with the livestock, and then we've gradually increased that to cover in the next year or so, we'll complete the full conversion of the whole area.
Yeah.
But in that journey of the sort of conversion into organic practices, the reason for organics was it was a very simple set of rules that everybody could follow that worked on the place. There was a definite sort of do and don't. But we learned pretty quickly that that was only part of the story. There was a lot more to learn in terms of soil health and looking at regenerative agriculture to try and reinvigorate some of the soils that we'd taken on that weren't in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the direction that we headed.
And what kind of soils do you have?
Yeah, massive range of soils. We go from sea level down on the Firth of Forth, where we've got pretty close to grade one arable deep silts, up to grade five LFA hill land, with some of our soils are clay subsoil with a very shallow topsoil, and some are much deeper. And that variation in soil type is fine because it gives us a spread across the season. But what we'd seen was that the best soils were the most depleted in organic matter, and we suffered a lot from wind blow in the spring, and we suffered a lot from the water retention on the surface on some of our thinner soils, which was restricting our grazing days. So although the soil types are varied, actually it's the management of those soils which we've seen that has had the biggest effect.
So you've seen benefits in organic matter, have you, from changing your practices and your grazing management?
I'd love to say yes. We analysed every field in 2016, so we had a base level, and we were using loss on ignition organic matter sampling when we did our GPS analysis for the standard NPK pH tests. I thought we would start to see an increase. Our increases are very small, but I think organic matter is a very slow game. What we have seen is that the health of that soil is starting to increase much faster. So the loss on ignition organic matter level is an indicator, but it's not the immediate indicator. What we have seen is increased grazing days.
Great.
And that for us was a real game changer in terms of being able to produce beef at an economic level.
Yeah, and so your soil structure was your structure and your water infiltration improved, would you say?
Yeah, and they've really been improved. Organic conversion was part of it, but we were farming conventionally without chemicals, really. Mm-hmm. We weren't organic mentality, I suppose. But starting to look down the route of the regenerative farming principles and the diversity being one of these things, making sure that our grass lays were made up of very diverse species. It all sounds lovely, but actually the proof for me is, you know, how many days can you graze and how many kilos can you get off it? And it definitely worked. We've been increasing the diversity of our grass lays. We've been increasing the rest period for each grass area to try and maximize the root growth. And that is the thing that's had the biggest difference on our soil health.
And what's a typical rest period that you try and use, or do you just be flexible and adapt as needed?
When I started getting involved with mob grazing, I realized it was like religion. You either were or you weren't. Actually, as the years go on, I think it is you hone it to suit you. And we find that early in the season, we can have a relatively short rest period. You know, 30 days is plenty. Because the grass is limited growth. And then as you get into the maximum grass growth, we can go to 90 days just because we've got, that grass isn't wasted. That grass is stored up to give us the extra days in kind of October to January. So instead of cutting silage, putting it in the pit and then feeding them in the shed, we're just not cutting the silage.
Yeah.
And we're feeding them in the field. So we do vary it, but we try and aim for no less than 30 days.
Right. And any particular seed mixes that you found on your farm that you like to use, that the livestock like eating?
Work in progress, I think, is what I'd say. We started off with what we thought was a herbal lay, which is predominantly ryegrass, clover and chicory. And it wasn't great, and there was too much chicory. And then we went to the sort of throw everything in the mix. And we thought by putting everything in, scattergun approach, we would have the right mix. But we realized fairly quickly that we hadn't actually seen any of the species that were very expensive.
Oh, no.
So we set about doing some trials with the seed merchant on which species grow, and we tried planting in the autumn, planting in the spring. We tried single species mixes. We tried all sorts of things. And we realized that there are some that just are not well suited. And there's no point in paying for something that doesn't grow.
Yeah.
What we did is we replaced that value of crop with other mixes or other ingredients in the mix that work. Under a system with no nitrogen in the growing grass, obviously red clover grows grows brilliantly in a few dry springs and a few dry summers, and red clover is now abundant and almost too much so we cut back on that,
right?
And we've gone for more tufted grasses because they're the ones that give us the early season growth and the late season growth, and we don't suffer from shortage of grass in July. We suffer from it in March and October.
Yeah, of course. Well,
we're getting there, but I think the difficulty with what we did was convert a large area fairly quickly. I'm glad that we've paced ourselves and haven't done it all in one go, because we'd have made a mistake on a fairly large scale. But I think trial and error, see what works. Mm-hmm. But certainly tufted grasses, they don't look very productive, and everybody will tell you, the feed merchants and mineral salesmen and anybody who analyzes grass will tell you they're rubbish, but the cattle will tell you otherwise.
And have you seen any kind of improvements in livestock health as a result of the mob grazing? Do you think there's benefits to?
Well, we did. There are. We did. We've done trials where we set stocked and mob grazed. So we had two different groups, and we trialed things like we did fecal egg counts to see whether they had a lower worm burden. Some years they do, some years they don't, some years they're the same. But actually the key thing is that they were no worse. But what we have seen is it's so much easier to handle livestock that are being handled like that daily. the first year we did it, I saw it all as just it was a lot of hard work and not a lot of gain. And the reason for that was we weren't doing enough of them. Mm-hmm. And then last year we mob grazed every animal. And the ease at which you can handle them with one person and a bike and electric fence, mm-hmm. suddenly that's a cheap system. It's taken out a lot of costs out of our silaging or bedding straw or mucking out or all those other costs. But in terms of the animal health, I think that there are improvements in cows in particular do very well on tall grass. They need more roughage. When you start feeding them too much rich clovery grass in September and October, you need a straw to keep the stuff inside them or it just comes straight out. When you're feeding them tall grass in a mix of lay, in a diverse lay, you don't need to do it. So there was another hassle we didn't need. There are definite improvements. Certainly fertility's every bit as good. There are things in there that I didn't like. There were things that we were forcing cows to stand in an area with an electric fence around the outside of it. They didn't have any natural scratching posts, fences, trees. Mm-hmm. We introduced mobile scratchers, so we pull them around. And you can really see that those are the sorts of things that if it bugs you, do something about it. If you think it's not natural, keep doing it, but just try and work a way around it. And the mobile mm-hmm. scratchers, actually, I think I'd put out in the field even if we were set stocking now, because they love them.
Great. And so I suppose the infrastructure is a big issue, like having the right infrastructure in place to do that. But once you've got it, it's straightforward enough.
Yeah, we over-engineered it actually to start with, because I thought exactly the same. And we put in semi-permanent fences and semi-permanent troughs, and this was to try and cut down on the time taken daily. Actually, we realized it's not that difficult. We're currently we're burying 6 kilometers of pipe at the minute to give us water to parcels of land that didn't have water before. But on the way, we're putting in pop-ups every 200 meters to plug in water pipes. What we were doing is using overground pipes and just dragging them around. But we realized that actually in -7 is not ideal. And if we grazing season, we need regular pop-ups, so we're just molding these pipes in, and we've got it. What we've tried to do now is do what we're doing cheaply and quickly and efficiently, and not over engineer it, because we don't need to. We just keep it simple. We don't bother with semi-permanent fences anymore. Everything's just done with electric fences. The bike is the key vehicle. Like in a field, I'm rolling a fence and rolling it back up. And it's very cheap, simple, and easy. And we just chuck around water troughs. We use kiwi troughs, which give us the ability to chuck water pipes around the farm and throw the troughs around, and it keeps going. We don't need to put in permanent troughs.
And that's actually a good thing, like from a soil science point of view, from trying to prevent these kind of hot spots of like nutrient loss and erosion and poaching. It's better to move the troughs around and to kind of not constantly have a permanent feature in a field. So
in the first year where we put these semi-permanent troughs in, we found that all the damage was around the troughs. And then we were trying to scatter grass seed on it when the cows weren't there to try and fill in the bare bits. And actually with these troughs, even if we don't move the cows every day, we will move the trough every day.
Yeah. So if anyone, farmers out there that want to kind of go down the route you've gone down, what do you think the key barriers are, and what kind of advice would you give to them?
My advice would be to try it in a field with a group of cows you already know. And if you've got a 40-acre field and 40 cows in it, and you know that it's going to give you all summer, just do that field, because it doesn't change. The only thing I would do is invest in a couple of geared reels and some electric fence poles and a battery or a solar electric fence unit, and try and split the field. The smaller you can make the paddocks and the more frequently you can make the moves, the better. But actually, even halving a paddock and grazing one half and then resting the other will make a difference to the grass growth. And it's not until you see what happens to rested grass that's only been grazed for a day that you realize how much more productive it is, because you haven't taken, you haven't harvested the roots. You've just harvested a little bit of the top and on again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that kind of the biodiversity and the height of the grass on top kind of suggests that below ground, there's going to be deeper roots and there's going to be better water infiltration and soil structure as a result of that, and maybe more resilient to the trampling as well, any damage from trampling.
Definitely. It's we used the Soil Mentor soil health check here, yeah, and we did various fields, and we definitely found that where we'd been mob grazing with our water infiltration, I mean, it was a fraction of the time that it was on our set stocked fields. And we did it at a time of year like this when it was very dry, and you know, we almost sort of had a bet with each other first on how many seconds it would take for this water to disappear. Yeah. And half an hour later, you're still waiting for this water to disappear. You don't have a problem. But on the mob grazed land with the long roots and tall grass, I mean, it literally is disappearing. And you know yourself when you dig up in a hedgerow, you know, just how dry it is. Well, it's exactly the same, but those hedges are still growing because it's still accessing moisture.
Yeah.
So it's you almost have to see the difference in what you're doing first between, you know, the set stock system and where you're leaving grass to grow to believe how much difference it makes. And it's much more resilient. We found that, you know, typically we had to bring cattle in when they started making a mess. Usually when we also had to start taking ring feeders out and feeding straw in the field, and it was just becoming a mess. Now we don't have to take the ring feeders out. We don't feed them any straw. We just keep them moving every day. We grazed 300 cows right the way through till the 7th of March this year. And I wouldn't have said it was the driest winter we'd had. Being able to do that, I mean, there were some days when I questioned what I was doing, but the reality was the cows were in really good condition. They were much happier outside. We brought them in and they suddenly ended up, you know, all scratching and getting lice and pretty miserable in the shed. And they looked absolutely fine outside.
Yeah.
I'm not brave enough to carve outside. But, you know, if we can extend our grazing season, so our cows, some of them are only in for a few days, some of them are still in now, just the last tail end calving. Well, if we can get our 8-week winter, that's fine.
Yeah.
We can manage that.
Yeah, so the financial returns and the improvements to farm business, as well as improvements to soils, hopefully the organic matter levels as well, that it takes time for that to change dramatically, but yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah, I think it will take time, but I think if your only goal is to increase organic matter levels, you'll be waiting a long time.
Finally, do you feel that there's anything, you know, that farmers could get some more kind of support and funding in the future?
Yeah, I think there's an entry level for somebody who's already got a livestock system, which is very little required. It's probably a bit of mentoring. It's probably a little bit of equipment and just some help working out. I was there. I mean, a number of days I spent staring at a map trying to work out how to do it, how to start. But that's where you just need a bit of help from externally, from somebody who's doing it, who, you know, you just stop worrying. It works. So if you already got livestock, you've got good fencing, you've got good water, you're already there. You just need a few extra bits in there. Mm-hmm. If you're an arable farm and you want to bring in somebody to graze or you want to put livestock on, that's another question. And some of our most depleted soils are those which have been intensively farmed with vegetables, etc. And I'm talking about us here at Balkaski. And there is no infrastructure. They lost their livestock 40, 50 years ago. So there's no fencing, no water, huge fields. Okay, that's a significant cost. And we can't just rely on electric fencing next to a main road to keep cattle and sheep in. So what are we going to do? And that's where you need to use the agri-environment schemes to try and get the help to build that once in a generation infrastructure, because it's not going to happen if you don't do it.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for the insights into your experiences with mob grazing and your soils, and I hope that gives other farmers some kind of hope that it's worth trying.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks, Joanna.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.